From Harrisburg to Erie, Latrobe to Havertown, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Biden administration is planning an assault on Second Amendment gun rights. Now, State Representative Daryl Metcalf is proposing the Right to Bear Arms Protection Act to ensure the rights of Pennsylvanians are not infringed. He is here to explain. A final 2020 jobs report is out. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi from the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy in Pittsburgh will break down the numbers. And it's known as the PRO Act. It would greatly curtail the economic freedom of workers and independent contractors. Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity PA has details on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Representative Daryl Metcalf in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Candidates are beginning to emerge for U.S. Senator and Governor as both seats are up for election in 2022. Governor Tom Wolf is term limited and cannot seek re-election, and Senator Pat Toomey has announced he will retire at the end of his term. On the Republican side, Jeff Bartos, who was the GOP nominee for lieutenant governor in 2018, has filed a statement of candidacy. Bartos lives in Montgomery County and is a real estate developer who has helped found a nonprofit that assists small businesses impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. On the Democratic side, State Representative Malcolm Kenyatta of Philadelphia announced he will run for the U.S. Senate. He joins Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman in that primary race. Montgomery County Commissioner Joe Gale has announced his intent to run for governor. The field of candidates for both offices is expected to grow considerably in the coming weeks. Republicans in the 59th State Legislative District in Westmoreland and Somerset counties have selected Leslie Rossi as their candidate in a special election to be held in May. That to fill a seat which became vacant earlier this year with the sudden death of State Representative Mike Reese. Rossi is best known for the Trump House, a property outside of Latrobe. She painted in patriotic colors and added a large cutout of the former president. She will face Democrat Mariah Fisher in a solidly Republican district. Legislation designed to move the National Guard into action to help administer COVID-19 vaccines is closer to passage as a Senate committee unanimously passed the bill, which will now go on to the Senate floor. State Representative Tim O'Neill of Washington County, who launched the effort, says West Virginia leads the nation in vaccinating its citizens, largely because of the involvement of the National Guard. Chaos and missteps have marred Pennsylvania's effort to deploy the vaccine. Officials are now working on ways to fix those problems. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. It is called nullification, a constitutional tool that allows states to disregard laws or executive orders handed down from the federal government. State Representative Daryl Metcalf has proposed the Right to Bear Arms Protection Act that would shield Pennsylvania gun owners from infringement of their rights by future actions of the Biden administration. Daryl represents the 12th Legislative District in Butler County. He is here to talk about his proposal. Daryl, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Daryl, you have introduced a bill, the Right to Bear Arms Protection Act. Before we get into the substance of that bill, you want to use a process called nullification. What is nullification?
A nullification would be something similar to what we did with the Real ID Act. Back during the Corbett administration, we passed in a majority fashion to the legislature, and Governor Corbett signed into law a bill that said that we were not going to comply with a federal law that we believed was in violation of our Constitution and violation of the policies that we set under the constitutional authority that we have as states. So we had objected to that, and we pushed back for, I think, close to a dozen years where we said we weren't going to comply with that federal law. And then you've seen a lot of states do it with the use of marijuana, where they have passed laws, something I wouldn't vote for, but they've passed laws to legalize the use of marijuana. And those types of laws that would ignore federal law, that would say we're not going to allow those laws to rule policy in our states. Ultimately, our bill would go a step further instead of just saying that we're not going to comply with federal law, but would not allow the feds to actually enforce any future gun controls measures in Pennsylvania as Biden and his accomplices want to promote during his administration.
What is the Biden administration contemplating at this point in time?
Well, certainly we've seen a flurry of executive orders that I think nobody fully has a grasp on all of the consequences to all the executive orders that he has been signing with his note cards in front of him when we've seen him on TV a number of times, trying to figure out what he's actually doing himself. So when we hear things like the quote that Biden had from when he was a candidate, said, you know, our enemy is the gun manufacturers, not the NRA, the gun manufacturers, where he wants to go after gun manufacturers and try and force them to assume liability for people who use firearms inappropriately. That's a backdoor that many in the Pennsylvania legislature, one of them that pursued that years ago was now Congressman Dwight Evans, had promoted that back in 98, 99 when I first got here, was trying to sue gun manufacturers to put the firearms industry out of business so that people wouldn't even have firearms to purchase. So that's one of his objectives, certainly. But his accomplices in D.C., the radical gun-grabbing liberals in D.C., they've introduced a bill, 127, House Resolution 127, that's been introduced by the Congressional Democrats. And that would create a huge, massive government-controlled registry that publicly lists the names of people who are gun owners, and they would then turn all of us that are gun owners into licensed gun owners. It would list the number of firearms that we each own, the types of ammunition that we possess, the location where we keep our guns, and this would be publicly listed. So the criminal element beyond government, which people that are promoting this in government, I believe, are part of the criminal element, violating our Constitution, but they would publicly list this information, which would put people who do own firearms at risk to be targeted by criminals who would then know the types of firearms they have and where they store them and type of ammunition even that they have. So they have a very aggressive gun-grabbing agenda from the Biden administration and his accomplices in Congress now think that they're going to have the ability to make some of that reality, but there's still a lot of us out here that are going to continue to fight any attempt to violate our constitutional rights to own firearms, to bear arms.
The Right to Bear Arms Protection Act that you have introduced, first of all, is this unique? Have other states done it? And then what would that act actually do?
I had introduced House Bill 357 is the bill number, and went after that number due to the 357 that's such a popular handgun. The 357 we introduced back before President Trump became president during the Obama years, because we had seen an aggressive liberal gun-grabbing agenda coming out of the former Obama administration, of which Biden was part of. So during the Trump years, there wasn't really a necessity for House Bill 357 because the federal government was working to protect our right to bear arms. So House Bill 357, we've reintroduced this session. A number of other states have also introduced bills that are similar to work to nullify any federal attempts to infringe further on our right to bear arms.
In addition to that, your proposed legislation would also require the Attorney General to intercede on behalf of the Commonwealth. That's not something that's currently required, is it?
No, it's and that's exactly right. Though, beyond prohibiting the enforcement of any new federal registrations, restrictions, prohibitions for privately owned firearms, magazines, or ammunition, we would also require that the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, including the Office of the Attorney General, would be there to use the force of government at the state level to work on behalf of the citizens of our state to oppose the use of force by the federal level to violate our constitutional right to bear arms, which I think is ultimately, if more states introduce these bills, as we've seen several introduced at this point, more states stand together, then I think that we'll see the Biden administration back down eventually. But it's going to be a fight.
We are talking with State Representative Daryl Metcalf about the Right to Bear Arms Protection Act. Daryl, let's shift gears a little bit here. You also are in the forefront of the fight against a number of radical environmental extremist bits of legislation that the Wolf administration is attempting to, in large measure, implement by regulation rather than legislation. One is the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which we have talked about many times on this program. Can you bring us up to date on where efforts are to prevent Pennsylvania from getting embroiled in this Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGGI?
We have been working diligently and aggressively in the House of Representatives here and also in the Senate. We've actually passed legislation in last session that the governor vetoed, and that legislation was passed bipartisan. There were solid votes in both the House and the Senate to ensure that the administration, the Wolf administration, knows that if before they would be allowed to join REGGI, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which is a multi-state organization in the Northeast, specifically with a few states brought in, such as Maryland. But this Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative would be something that would impose higher energy costs on our citizens here in Pennsylvania. It would drive up the cost of electricity. It would destroy jobs in our state, something that we need more than ever now with trying to recover from all of the shutdowns, unconstitutional shutdowns that the Wolf administration had imposed on our economy and our citizens here in this state. But the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, we've sent letters to IRC, which the governor introduced this scheme to impose a carbon tax essentially on the people of Pennsylvania. Ultimately, it would be paid for by the people, the consumers of electricity in Pennsylvania, and paid for with the loss of thousands of jobs, ultimately, I believe, across the state of Pennsylvania.
You reference the governor's many shutdown orders and also his proclivity for acting unilaterally rather than having the legislature fulfill its constitutional role. And the legislature has proposed a constitutional amendment that would now restore legislative oversight and some balance to the governor's executive powers in declaring these emergencies. Where does that stand, and what's the next step in trying to bring that balance back into play?
Well, we have passed a provision that would allow, pass legislation that will enable and allow Pennsylvania citizens to have their voices heard at the ballot box, have a chance to vote on a constitutional amendment to change the way that our emergency powers are utilized in Pennsylvania. We have a law that creates emergency powers. That law had a provision that would allow the legislature to order the governor to shut down his emergency declarations. We worked through the legislative process to exercise the power that we provided in law to do so. The governor and the Democratic-controlled Pennsylvania Supreme Court violated the law and the Constitution when they said that that law wasn't constitutional and that we didn't have a right to shut down the powers that we ultimately, through the legislature, years before I got here, had given to the executive branch. So we now are forced to move in a constitutional amendment direction, and that's what's going to enable the people of Pennsylvania to weigh in now and let the governor, let the legislature, let the world know that the people of Pennsylvania are still free and that their constitutional rights should not be violated and will not be violated in the future after they vote to embrace this new constitutional amendment that will limit the emergency powers.
And we, the people, will get an opportunity to weigh in on May 18th in the primary election on that topic. We have been talking with State Representative Daryl Metcalf. He represents the 12th Legislative District, that in Butler County. And Representative, can you tell us how folks can find out more about the topics we've been discussing and get in touch with you?
They're able to find me through the internet, of course. There's lots of information out there, not all of it true, not all of it good, that a lot of things have been put out on the internet, but they can go to the internet, and it does have a lot of good information also, and repmetcalf.com would be the place to go to get accurate information, R-E-P-Metcalf, M-E-T-C-A-L-F-E.com, repmetcalf.com.
State Representative Daryl Metcalf. Daryl, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you, Loman. Thanks for the opportunity. You all have a great day.
As expected, employment numbers for 2020 are down significantly, but the impact varies considerably by sector. Here with a look at the 2020 numbers are Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi from the Allegheny Institute in Pittsburgh. Eric?
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. The data for statewide job performance in Pennsylvania was released recently. So now this gives us an entire picture of 2020. What happened? What were the impacts of the coronavirus on various sectors of the economy? You wrote about this in a brief recently, and now you can discuss it with our listeners. Let's start with non-farm jobs. How did they perform in 2020?
In 2020, obviously, the pandemic played a big role, a huge role in jobs, and the economy in Pennsylvania was crushed, as it was nationally. It's just it was crushed more here in Pennsylvania than across the nation. For example, you look at the average number of jobs per month in the Commonwealth in 2020, it was about 5.61 million, was down 7.4% from 2019, 6.01 million. Now, again, you're talking a couple of million, but keep in mind that the amount of jobs that we had seen on average in 2020 was the lowest number than we had seen since 2009, the beginning of the Great Recession, when it was only 5.62 million. So we really stepped back a little bit. Now, in comparison, nationally, the job average monthly jobs, non-farm jobs in 2020 was only 5.75% lower than it was in 2019, and they only slid back to the 2015 period. So it slid more in Pennsylvania than it did across the nation. And of course, the nation is buoyed by highly performing states like Texas and Florida and Georgia and whatnot that didn't really lock down as much as we did. But that being said, even prior to the pandemic, Pennsylvania has not been able to keep up with national non-farm job growth. When you look at 17 to 18, Pennsylvania grew non-farm jobs at a 1.15% rate. The U.S. did it at a 1.6% rate. In 18 and 19, non-farm jobs in Pennsylvania were only 0.9% higher, but 1.4% higher than the nation. So we've never been able to keep up. And as a result, when bad times hit, we slid faster.
Okay, so let's divide the non-farm jobs then into goods producing and service producing. So there's three sectors that you looked at in goods producing. Can you tell our listeners how those three sectors were affected?
Absolutely. Goods producing, for those who aren't familiar with the term, these are mining and logging, construction, and then manufacturing. So these are the sectors where there's value added to the product. Something's actually made and produced. And looking at the first one, mining and logging. Now, in 2020, mining and logging had the worst year of the three goods producing sectors. It was down 14% over what the average monthly number was in 2019. Now, in all honesty, mining and logging had been sliding for quite a while, but they really took it on the chin in 2020. Construction. Now, construction's interesting because when the lockdown first was issued in March, they were shut out of their jobs for a while, but then they came back in May and were able to do their work, you know, with obvious COVID measures in place. And so they only lost 6.7% of their jobs, and manufacturing lost 5.68% of their jobs. So combined, the goods producing sector in Pennsylvania was down 6% in 2020 versus what it was in 2019. Now, the second segment of the economy is service-providing industries, and the service-providing industries, you know, the main ones, trade, transportation, utilities, professional business services, education, health, leisure, and hospitality, and, of course, government. Well, let's start with government because they lost the least. They only lost 2% jobs from 2020 over 2019, and part of that had to do with the fact that the federal level actually grew jobs in the Commonwealth in 2020. It was like 3% growth. You had a little bit of a loss at the state level and a bigger loss at the local level. Now, part of the local issue was schools were closed. Public schools were closed. Local government education is considered a government job. And while teachers were still on the job because they were teaching remotely via Zoom or whatever, the support staff was laid off. So they lost a lot of support staff. So they probably had the biggest slide. But overall, not too bad as far as losing their jobs. You know, as we said in previous briefs, like the Port Authority and the Airport Authority, which are government jobs, they didn't lay anybody off this entire time despite having massive reductions in services. Let's get to the private sectors, trade, transportation, utilities. Now, what's interesting here is it covers retail, trade, and called general merchandising stores. And so they were, of course, allowed to stay open because they were considered necessities. But retail trade had been really doing poorly for quite a while and been falling. No surprise here that it fell even during the pandemic, fell 6.55%. I'm sorry, retail 6.5% was a drop in trade, transportation, utilities. The retail sector was down 8.5%, despite the fact that the stores and the general service merchandising stores were still allowed to be open. Other stores were not allowed. Probably the big loser in all this is leisure and hospitality. Mm-hmm. The lockdown really affected the bars, the restaurants, the hotels, the casinos, concert venues, sporting events. All of that stuff was really, really hit very, very hard. And so in 2020, their losses ended up 30% by December. In April, it was actually down almost 60%. In May, it was 50%. So they really just had a terrible year in 2020. Quite frankly, not really sure when they're going to rebound because they had two lockdowns. Keep in mind, they were locked down from half of March through most of June. And then again in December, the governor locked them down again. So you had some terrible drops in leisure and hospitality for the year. It was about 26%.
Well, here's an interesting thing that you point out in the brief about healthcare, mm-hmm. which is an area you would think that would not have a lot of job losses. You found that in 2020 in Pennsylvania, that sector actually did.
Right. Again, people tend to think, oh, eds and meds, right? Eds and meds is going to carry the state. We're good in eds and meds. Now, education health service was down 5%, so they came out of this reasonably well. But hospital employment was one that was really interesting. Hospital employment, which had been kind of weak the last couple years, actually ended the year losing 2.6% jobs. Now, keep in mind that the governor also restricted elective surgeries and tests and things of that nature. And so you really had people staying away from hospitals, even though if you were infected with COVID and had a very bad reaction to it, you were in the hospital. The governor made sure that no one else was really using it as well, and that really hurt them in the long run. And same with doctors' offices, which is called ambulatory health care. Doctors' offices, for the most part, things like dentists and psychiatrists and whatnot, which are listed under ambulatory health care, they were shut down for a while. So the health services sector really suffered a lot in 2020, which is contrary to thinking for a pandemic.
Great stuff as always, Frank, and our listeners can visit our website, which is www.alleghenyinstitute.org. You can follow us on Twitter. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
The PRO Act is the latest assault on the freedoms of union workers and independent contractors. So says Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
From capitals across the country to Washington, D.C., lawmakers are considering what we can do to stop the coronavirus so that we can then emerge from this pandemic in a way that propels our economic recovery for the benefit of all Americans. One certain way to get our economy moving again is to clear the way for people to get back to work, both quickly and safely. From Harrisburg to our nation's capital, lawmakers should be exploring the expansion of opportunities to employment. Instead, the inverse is happening. For example, in our own state capital, Representative Mahaffey has introduced legislation that would force personal trainers to abstain from providing nutritional and dietary advice to their clients unless they become registered dietitian nutritionists. The creation of a new occupational barrier like this are the opposite way members of our General Assembly should be thinking. At the federal level, we have 7 members of our congressional delegation who have signed on to the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, or the PRO Act, legislation that would undermine the choice and dignity of individual workers while granting unequal privileges to labor unions. This legislation has many harmful provisions, but we're just going to walk through some of the most significant. First, it would invalidate right-to-work laws enacted in 27 states. Right to Work gives private sector employees the same freedom as all public employees to choose whether they wish to be members of a union and pay fees out of their hard-earned paychecks. Right to Work states have significantly greater employment growth, lower taxes, and higher relative incomes than non-right to work states. Second, it would restrict the ability of millions of people, including Pennsylvanians, to work as independent contractors. The PRO Act would institute a California-style ABC test that also subjects reclassified workers to unionization. The vast majority of independent contractors prefer their existing arrangement to traditional employment, yet the PRO Act reduces workers' ability to control their own schedules and provide services to a broader range of clients as they see fit. Now more than ever, because of the COVID-19 pandemic, working parents need flexible work to accommodate childcare and volatile school schedules. In an economic downturn, independent contracting also provides an opportunity to bring income in the door and stay connected to the workforce while transitioning careers. It would also eliminate franchising and contractor-subcontractor arrangements as we know them. Vague and confusing joint employer standards would fundamentally change how contractors and subcontractors work together and even undermine relationships between businesses and vendors, all of which currently create important and accessible opportunities for entrepreneurship. The PRO Act would infringe on the privacy of workers. Employers would be required to provide extensive employee contact information to unions, including workers' home addresses, their personal phone numbers, and much more. Labor union officials would then use this information to confront workers anywhere and everywhere, often in intimidating manners due to the leeway they are given in communicating with workers. The PRO Act would also deprive workers of the right to a secret ballot to vote on whether they wish to be represented by a union, subjecting them to further harassment and intimidation from union organizers. Last, the PRO Act would slant organizing efforts heavily in favor of unions. This bias would come at the expense of employee and employer rights by limiting legal communication, drastically shortening election timeframes to stifle discussion and education opportunities, and limiting the ability of employers to challenge concerning practices while awarding unions organizing victories without proper elections under certain circumstances. We at Americans for Prosperity are asking you to visit votenopro.com. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WXTU-FM in Bella Cynwyd, along with WBVP-AM and WMBA-AM in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.